if everybody's depending on an AI, there's no competitive edge there. Go do something that doesn't depend on AI and you're going to have a massive edge, because that's going to be where the minority is, and that's the contrarian kind of thing that'll help you. And then just use AI where needed to, like, you know, simplify your life so that you can do the things that you want to do as a human better.
This week, we are taking a dive back into the decentralization of social media and its commingling with the adoption of Bitcoin, with return guest Alex Svetsky, author of The Bushido of Bitcoin and the founder of the newly launching website Subtlantis, which is a Nostr-enabled all-in-one travel app for nomads and world travelers experiencing real life in the real world. Hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week we are joined by special guest Alex Svetsky for a conversation about the future of decentralized social media. Alex, welcome to the show.
Scott, good to see you again, man. I love the red lights and the whole little setup you got there. It looks very cozy.
Thank you. Yes, we went full retro. So it's like my home away from home.
I've got like red glasses and shit here, and then I've got my red light set up in the room, but it's daytime today, so unfortunately can't join you in the red.
One day, we'll do an N Studio one day.
Totally, 100%.
So you've been busy traveling the world, promoting books, building businesses. Maybe do you want to just quickly start with kind of an update of what you've been up to and what's got you excited these days?
Absolutely, man. So what has it been, like 2 years since we first caught up? Maybe a year and a half or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. So in that time, I guess the last time we spoke, we must have spoke a bit about Bushido. So in that time, I ended up publishing the book. It came out, it done the rounds, and I haven't been focusing too much on the book lately because I've been really busy building Subtlantis, and we'll speak about that in a second. But basically, there's been a big shift in gears for me. Like, I was in total writer mode for the last couple of years. So since Uncommunist Manifesto, you know, published that, wrote that, I was doing a bunch of writing for Bitcoin Magazine, Bitcoin Times, then the Bushido Bitcoin was like a 2.5-year project. So that was all big. You know, obviously, since the last time we spoke, I also tinkered with the AI stuff. So we built out Spirit of Satoshi with the team. And that was cool. That was more like an experimental proof of concept. We never figured out how to really commercialize it. And I think the AI space is just really one where you're either some full-on hyper-technical open source studio and stuff like that that can build, you know, really cool models that can compete with the big guys, or you're one of the big guys. In between doesn't work, you know? So, and we weren't that sophisticated. We wanted to build something cool that was more like a Bitcoin-focused model. And in the end, we ended up building a pretty cool model. We open sourced it. It's on Hugging Face. Anybody can download it. It's called the Satoshi 7B. I still think it's the most true to Bitcoin model in the world. So people can use it. They can download it. They can run it on their local machine, all that sort of stuff. It's there. It's free. And it's for people to use. But since that time, me and the core team that built the Spirit of Satoshi, we pivoted and we started building a platform called Subtlantis, which is like a travel and community centric social network. So it's a whole new thing. It's part like map, part directory, part social app, part events app. It's kind of got like multiple pieces to it. It's a freaking behemoth of a project. And the funny thing is it spawned from a question someone asked, is like, oh, could we use Spirit of Satoshi to tell me about the cool Bitcoin hotspots around the world? So the idea sort of started from there. So I guess if I wasn't doing the AI thing, I probably wouldn't be doing Subtlantis. So it's funny how life kind of takes you on a journey. But that's the Cliff Note updates. Book, Spirit of Satoshi, Subtlantis. But really everything is kind of like moved towards now Subtlantis. That's the full-time thing. I actually handed off Bitcoin Times to Knut and Luke from Freedom Footprint and Everything Divided by 21 Million. So the boys are running with that. I'm still helping and assisting, but that's me now, man. 100% on, or maybe I should say 98% on Subtlantis, 2% on Bushido Bitcoin.
Very cool. So I'd love to get into Subtlantis and pull on a few different threads, but maybe let's just start with, where did the inspiration for the original concept come from? Outside of wanting to, you know, branch through this AI, like, how did you get it started?
So I've been a nomad and traveling the world for, you know, 6 years now, and then it all happened by accident. I left Australia for what was supposed to be 3 weeks. And then one thing led to another, this conference, that conference, moving around, all this sort of stuff. Then I got locked down in Germany. And then after that, seeing what happened in Australia, I was like, screw this. I am not going back to that country. And I basically became, quote unquote, a nomad. And for many years, I used this platform called Nomadlist to get a sense of which places are kind of hotspots and cool and, you know, try and like find a community and stuff like that. And it was never great. You know, like it was a bit better in the early days. And then it just kind of like fell off because the founder is kind of like this serial indie hacker who's just like spinning up different projects all the time. And, you know, he doesn't give Nomadlist any real attention. So when I was in Salvador in 2023, so this was around, we were still tinkering with Spirit of Satoshi, and I was asked that question, hey, you know, could I use this, tell me the Bitcoin hotspots. I got together with this guy, his name was Robert, and we originally sort of established the idea together. And what the original concept was called Bitcoin Nomad List, right? We were literally just going to knock off Nomad List, but just focus on Bitcoin locations. And the difference we were going to use, where Nomad List just scrapes a bunch of data online to score places and stuff like that, we wanted to find local Bitcoiners, local ambassadors in these locations to help establish the scoring for the different cities and make it more real, make it more like, hey, there's someone on the ground that we trust. And we asked ourselves the question, well, how do we find out who these people are? And we thought, okay, well, let's go on Twitter and find out, you know, who's where and all this sort of stuff. And we started doing that there. We're like, man, this is not scalable. Twitter doesn't have an API, or they do have an API, but it's super expensive. We can't build a business around this. What else? And then we looked into Nostr. And as we looked into Nostr, we realized, wait a minute, there's this social graph here. So we started realizing that maybe we were onto something a little bit bigger as an idea. And then we ended up calling it Destination Bitcoin. So the idea was like, hey, could we create something where you've got these Bitcoin-centric destinations and circular economies and all this sort of stuff, and give them a little bit more. Like, let's add an events map in there. Sorry, yeah, an events map in there, and let's add some merchants and stuff like that in there. Almost like you could think it's like BTC Maps with Orange Pill App together, and maybe Meetup.com, right? So we're kind of trying to blend those three ideas. And the more we dug into it, then the more we realized, we thought, shit, this is way bigger than just Bitcoin communities. Like, there's like nomad communities, there's longevity communities, there's network state movements, there's the whole remote work movement, there's geo-arbitrage, there's all this other stuff. And we thought, you know what, if we call this Destination Bitcoin, we're just going to pigeonhole ourselves into like one dimension, and that's just dumb. So we kind of zoomed out a little bit further, and we decided, okay, what's a cool name? And we were like talking about like Atlas, and we're talking about Atlantis and all these kind of names. And we realized with Atlas and Atlantis, if we put a S at the front of it, you had SAT, right? And we thought, okay, well, we can pay a homage to Bitcoin and Satoshi with this, but people who are not into Bitcoin won't really get the reference. So it's kind of appeals to both. And yeah, then we kind of like, it was between Satlas and Satlantis. That was the two names we tossed up. And we ended up with Satlantis, and the idea kind of broadened from there. So to summarize, the inspiration came from the experience that I had over many years of traveling, and knowing that there's things that when you're traveling, and whether you're traveling as a nomad or even just traveling for work, or as a what I would call like a location-independent expat. So someone who might have a base, but they move around the world a lot. Like, you want to connect with people, you want to find events, and you want to find all the cool spots. Trying to weave those together was where the subconscious or visceral inspiration came for the app. And then we just followed our nose in how it evolved from the original idea of Bitcoin Nomad List to what it is today as Atlantis.
Very cool. You mentioned Nostr, and I'd love to just take a 2-second detour. We did do an episode earlier this year, episode 66 with Will from Damas. It was sort of a deep dive on Nostr. But for our listeners that missed that episode or aren't familiar with it, maybe you could just give us a quick like TLDR on what Nostr is, and tell us a little bit about your experience in building on Nostr.
Yeah, for sure. So Nostr is very, very interesting. The way I like to think of it, and everyone's got a different definition of what Nostr is, I look at it as a rich identity protocol for the web. So I think about it. So I think of it as an identity protocol. Now, people call it a social protocol. People call it this and this and this and that. But for me, the identity protocol is the main component. And because it's rich, it allows you to use it as a social protocol and build social apps or social-centric applications on it. So the way it works, and this is something that is not new to Nostr, like people have been trying to do this for decades now with the internet, is the user's identity is a key pair. So you have a public key and you have a private key. Public key is your effectively your username. Your private key is the what gives you access, the ability to write notes or files or whatever with that key.
Which is how Bitcoin works for people who are...
Spot on. I was literally about to say that. So Bitcoin opened the door to this. So in the early days, the early engineers of the internet always wanted to have identity as a protocol, but it never happened. Identity ended up just being a feature inside applications built on the internet. So, you know, when you're logging into Facebook or Instagram or your internet banking, Uber, whatever, every single application out there is an app on top of the internet. And within that app, there is a feature called user ID, right? So your identity lives inside the application that lives on top of the web. Nostr kind of flips that paradigm. And there's other things as well. There's PubKey, there's Scuttlebutt, there's all these like different identity protocols that are floating around. But basically it flips it on its head and says, okay, pull the identity feature out of the app, push it down to the protocol level, so that people, the users, are sovereign and they hold their identity. And now, instead of logging in, I don't even like to call it logging in because that's not what you're doing when you access a Nostr app. What you're doing is you're unlocking the Nostr app with your key and you are entering and your identity is yours and then you interact with that app. And this is why we call Nostr apps clients, because they are a client that interacts with the Nostr protocol and allows people with an idea with an Nostr identity to play with it. So to kind of like, without getting too much in the weeds here, it's so you've got this rich identity protocol. It's a key pair. It allows you to access any Nostr enabled app. The benefit of that is everything that's associated to your key pair, and this is the where the rich identity protocol piece comes in. You can associate your followers, so who you follow, who follows you, your profile, your associate interest. You can associate all of this data to your key. So then that gives you the ability to log into Primal or Satlantis or Damas or Amethyst or any other app. And all of a sudden, your follower graph, your profile photo, your description, all your stuff is there. That's really, really powerful. And it allows people now to have a portable identity across the new web. And for me, that's how I see it. Now, there's disagreements in the Nostr space as to what that is useful for. Some people argue that, hey, that's all about censorship resistance and stuff like that. And, you know, I would say somewhat it is. You know, people call Nostr a free speech protocol. And yeah, to some degree it is. But in my personal opinion, I think the superpower of Nostr is having the power of email with the distribution of social. And what I mean by that specifically is people will always tell you, marketers will always tell you, the only list you own is your email list. Every other list is rented, right? So if you have a big Instagram following, if Instagram turns you off or changes the algorithm, whatever, your following is worth nothing, right? So you want to always funnel people back to your email list because your email list, you can own it in a CSV and you can always port it. Nostr kind of has that because your key has all of the user attributions associated to it. So it's almost like an email list, but it's a freaking social graph. It's a whole social protocol. So it has the distribution of a social network, but with the power of an email list. So that's for me where I think the killer feature is of Nostr or of any identity protocol. And for me, Nostr is the one that really took off and has done well. And that's why we decided to build on build Satlantis with Nostr. So I hope that makes sense. I don't know if I confuse people. Let me know if I can clarify anything there.
No, that was beautifully explained. And I love hearing everyone's different take. Like you said, it is communicated a lot of different ways, what it is and why you would want to use it. So I guess then maybe to spell out the connection for people who are following along, what does it mean to be built on Nostr for Satlantis and their users?
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about a distinction that I try and use a little bit. So there's built on Nostr and there's built with Nostr. And in the beginning, we were built on Nostr. we tried to build all of our features Nostra compatible, everything from events to the city scoring mechanism to reviews to everything. And it was a fucking nightmare. Nostra is still early. I would argue that there's only three or four kinds, which are like basically Nostra data types that function properly. And that is like post content, create account, follow, right? Like, you know, there's a bunch of other, there's a million and one other proposals, but they're all sort of, they don't work very well. Or if they do work well, there's only like one or two clients that use them. So it's not very interoperable. You know, the standards aren't really in place and all this sort of stuff. So we made the mistake of trying to build a pretty broad app on Nostra entirely. And it was a train wreck. We completely fucked up. Like half the shit didn't work. It took on extra technical debt and all this sort of stuff. And it affected us more than it would affect the, you know, an app like Damus or Primal or something else, because those ones are, they're much more simple. They're more like Twitter. So you have text, you have a profile, and you have zaps. Like we were trying to do merchants and events and all this other shit, right? So it's like, it's a much broader application and we're trying to build all of that on Nostra, and it was extremely painful. So about, I'd say 4 or 5 months ago, we changed tack. And that was after when we caught up, actually, I saw you in November in El Salvador. And our original intent back then was to launch it then. But as I said, it was a train wreck of a launch. We fumbled and we found that 80% of the app didn't work properly. So we decided to look at the app through a different lens. And we said, okay, what makes sense today with Nostra and what doesn't? And the things that made sense was accounts. Every single account on Satlantis is a private, is an NPUB. It's a key. The user ID is a NPUB. And people have an NSEC, and that's it. So it is Nostra. That part is Nostra. What else? Well, every single bit of content that you post is a kind one event. And if you post anything rich from Satlantis, and when I say rich, I mean things like you found a merchant on Satlantis, you found an event, and you want to post that, you can post it and it embeds inside a kind one event. So it almost like renders like a link to another website. That's basically what it looks like. So we said, all right, accounts, kind one posts, which is basically every single post on Satlantis. What else? I guess the username, description, the follower list, all this sort of stuff. So the social graph. So all of that stuff we decided to build with Nostra. And then the more complex features where the NIPs are not ready on Nostra, or it's too complex, or it's too shaky, or there's no interoperability, including events and merchants, primarily, they're the two things, and the city pages, I would argue as well. Those things are Satlantis native. So you'll only find those on Satlantis because no other app supports anything like that. And in time, the plan will be when we're more stable, when we're larger, when we've actually figured out how those features should function for ourselves, because we're still discovering this app as we build it, we will then look to make those features Nostra compatible. So we will suggest our own NIPs, and then people can, if they want to, support those NIPs and add those features to their apps. So that's kind of like the approach now we're taking. So we are a Nostra app. We are technically a client. We are built somewhat on Nostra, but I like to use the word we are built with Nostra, because we just, you know, the assumption is that Nostra is going to be here for the next 50 years. So we don't have to rush and build everything on Nostra now and make the product crap. Like, let's make the product really good. And then let's Nostrify it over time. And that's been a hell of a lot better now, because we released a little teaser version of the app yesterday, or actually, no, the day before on Monday. So people can now download it. And the feedback we're getting straight away is like, oh, holy crap, this is so much better than the first piece of shit you showed me. And I was like, yeah, I know, because we actually built it right this time. So we're going to take our time and just do it right.
And so you mentioned there's a mobile app and a web app traditionally, and they have their sort of different functionality and use case. And do you want to maybe talk a little bit about that? I mean, and I was looking myself at it this morning, and like, there is a ton of cool stuff that you can do on there. Maybe some of the things that you want to like go a little bit deeper on, a highlight. I know you mentioned kind of events and like, you know, really paint the picture.
Yeah, let's do it. So when we first started Satlantis, it was a web app. We went web first, and we were, as I said, we were taking inspiration from Nomadlist. And if anyone's listening to this and they're familiar with Nomadlist, they'll recognize like the cities and the tiles that we use and the score summaries and all this kind of thing. So that's where we started. As we developed, we realized, holy crap, we need a mobile app. And I still actually remember the day. Like, I thought, you know what? Like, it just hit me like a bolt of inspiration. I said, the mobile app should be a different experience than the web app. And what I think what made me think about this is, as I was doing the research on other products and all this sort of thing, I looked at Instagram and I looked at TripAdvisor and I noticed something. Instagram is used 99.9% of the time on mobile. Nobody uses it on web. And for those who haven't seen the web version of Instagram, it's literally just the mobile screen like slapped on the website. It doesn't look good. And that's why. So it's a mobile app just slapped on a web. And what I thought, I said, look, we need to build a completely unique experience on web that is different and distinct to the mobile experience. Because when people are on a computer and they're on web, they're using the app differently. They're thinking, they're planning ahead for where I'm going to go, what do I want to do. They're usually like, you know, when you're planning a trip and let's say I'm going to go to Dubai next month, I'm going to look on the laptop first and see what's going on there and maybe build a bookmark, build a collection list or something like that and plan my trip ahead. So we built the web in that case more like a directory, and it's more city-centric or destination-centric. So you can go to the webpage, you can select your city, you can join a community, you can check out the merchants that are on there. We don't have this right now, but you'll soon be able to just bookmark the places that you want to go to. And that we're calling that feature collections. So you could almost do like your itinerary. You know, you see, okay, I'm going to go to Prague and I'm going to bookmark this event and this burger joint and that carnival place and, you know, this massage and this and that. And you can kind of like build your own Prague collection. So when you land there, you can then open the app, go into your collection, and you can find them right in front of you. So the app is like action oriented, on the go, you're in the place and you're looking for things and you're posting content. So the app looks and feels and functions a lot more like Instagram in that sense, because you can take a photo. I had this awesome meal. You know, you can rate and review a merchant. You can recommend them. You can suggest a merchant if they're not on the map and all this sort of stuff. So you've got this kind of like action oriented in the present experience on the mobile app, but the web is this, you pick by city and you plan and you get a bird's eye view of the world, of this Atlantis topography. And those two experiences, in my opinion, are very good to separate. But from a developer and builder perspective, it meant that we ended up building two fucking apps, which is why this thing has taken so long. God help me. It's not only the two different apps there, but we actually have, if you actually look at the distinct elements of our app, we have a meetup.com alternative. Like you can, in the next, I would say, well, actually by the time people listen to this episode, there you can go in, you can create an event, you can invite co-hosts, you can add a location and you can publish the event and you can start inviting people. You can use a meetup equivalent effectively for free. And happy days. It's on Noster and it's a Atlantis app. So we have an entire events app, but we also have a merchants app. So you've always got like a kind of like a Google Maps meets TripAdvisor piece in there where we actually pull in all the reviews from TripAdvisor, Yelp, Google Maps, everywhere. We give you a summary, beautiful coverage of the actual place. You've got all the details, all the information there, and it is rank ordered by your interests and your social graph. And this is, we should probably have a dedicated section that we discuss around like how the social graph influences all of this. But where I'm going with this is we have events app, we have a whole merchant experience, and we have the social experience, which on web, it's more oriented around joining cities and joining communities. And on mobile, it's more oriented around posting content, following people, and doing what you would do on a normal social app. So we have like three apps in one. And then we have a web experience and a mobile experience. So it's almost like we're building six apps. It's insane. So that's a bit of an overview on why I'm losing my fucking mind here.
Yeah. And so for a user, it's cool. You go to, say, I have a planned trip to Prague, which unfortunately I don't right now. But and what I would experience as a web browsing user when I go in there is sort of seeing all the pulled content from everyone else who's been to Prague, tagging meals, getting massages, all these other things. And then there's this, you mentioned the social graphing. So maybe it's a cool time to go there. So while I'm doing that, I can also see like kind of all of these different like comprehensive ratings and reviews scoring system.
Yep, pretty much. And then when you're on the ground, you can action it. So let's jump into the social graph then. So if we, let me explain it this way. If we zoom out, we have seen over the last, I would say 10 years, and particularly over the last 5 years, since we all got locked down and crammed in our houses and all this sort of stuff, there's been this like massive bounce back to people wanting to experience the world, travel, do events, meet people, eat together and all this sort of stuff in a social capacity, right? Like travel and the location independence, nomading, all this stuff, it's become a thing, like, and it's a very social thing. The trouble is travel applications haven't kept pace with that. Like the biggest travel apps are basically TripAdvisor and Yelp and I don't know, Google Maps, right? They're not built in a social way. Like they like TripAdvisor is more of a directory with reviews. Yelp is just a shitty review site with a directory element, and Google Maps is a map with, you know, you can save things to your map, but the bookmarking is not great. People end up with a million pins on their map and they can't do anything with it. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got these social apps, which they're fantastic and they're being used a lot by travelers and by nomads and, you know, this whole community of people that are trying to be more location independent and sovereign. And they're posting things, oh, I checked out this place, I found this place, and I five top things to do in Dubai or Prague or whatever. But the problem with that on social apps is that it's very ephemeral. Like, you know, you post it, you see a post and you lose it. Like it's gone. You know, maybe sure you might be able to bookmark it, but out of the hundreds of people I've interviewed, nobody ever looks back at their Instagram or their Twitter bookmarks. You know, we do it to feel good, but you know, the shit's all hidden there somewhere, right? So you've got this kind of social applications that are all dynamic and different and they sort of fit the world that we're in, but they're not travel apps. And then on the other side, you've got these travel apps that have that are static and stale and not dynamic and not personalized, but that's what we have for travel. So we find ourselves like using both. What I tried to do, or what we're trying to do here with Atlantis, is we're trying to bridge those two and build something right in the middle that has the power of social, but has the structure of a travel app. So that way, and then this is why the city pages are also structured the way they are. Every city page has dedicated place for scoring, for stats and facts. Soon we'll have guides in there, we'll have jobs in there, we'll have events and experience and merchants and all this sort of stuff. So you can actually find these things, you can properly bookmark them. Things are tagged the right way, you can search for them, you can find them. You know, we'll have services in the future, all this kind of stuff on there. So you can find stuff in the city without it being like an ephemeral piece of content, right? So we're looking for a broader set of content types to build the app around. So where the social graph comes in, and this is sort of the big idea if I had to summarize it, is this is a travel application with the same superpowers that a social app like Instagram would have. And what that gives you is a couple really powerful benefits. Number one, let's look at merchants. And merchants, we have six categories of merchants. We have food and drink, we have health and wellness, we have co-working and event spaces, we have attractions, we have nightlife, and then we have like farmers markets and local markets and stuff like that. So they're the six categories. You and I, let's just say for argument's sake, you're a vegan and I'm a carnivore. You and I have different interests. When we come to a city, instead of us opening a map or opening a merchant list and seeing the same places, you and I should see different places based on our interest list. And furthermore, the weighting of those places should be influenced by the people we follow or share interests with. And this is where you get the, so you got the interest graph and you have the social graph. And if you can kind of like blend those preferences together in some way, you and I can get a different relevant feed for merchants, for events, for contacts, for content, for experiences, for everything. So the idea is that we will have a different experience of the city based on who we are and what our social graph looks like. That's kind of the big idea. And I don't think that's ever been done. There was an attempt, if you remember, you're probably of a similar age to me. Do you remember Foursquare?
Yeah.
So Foursquare tried to do something like this 15 years ago, and it was a great idea, but they failed. And I believe they failed for two reasons. One being the tech just wasn't ready. Like if you remember what mobile apps looked like 15 years ago, like trying to bring this sort of complexity into mobile app, it didn't work. But number two, and more importantly, Instagram had to come first and change the world. Before Instagram, nobody shared like to the web, like where I'm going, what I'm doing, like, you know, and for better or worse, nobody shared a photo of their freaking food. Like nobody did that. That's a thing now. Like Instagram fundamentally changed the world. And there's some very interesting statistics. I don't remember off the top of my head now, but how Instagram moved the world away from buying things and stuff and moved it more towards experiences. That means, and this is sort of the positioning that I said to our investors when I raised some money for this, I said, now is the time for this app. The world wants it. People are craving connection. They're craving real life experience. They're craving a social network, not just another social media app. Because like, if you look at all the socials now, like it's no longer about who you follow, who you connected with. Everything is just like clickbait slop, right? It's just fucking media, 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 media. I want to know what Scott suggested in Salvador. I don't want to know what some fucking influencer that I don't know that the algorithm is just feeding me. Fuck that. So people are craving this. The technology now exists with Nostr, with, you know, modern app development frameworks, with AI allowing us to do this faster. And the culture is ready for it. So like these three things to me tell me like this is the time for this application. I honestly think if we do this right, you know, this is a long-term play. I don't expect us to be a huge company anytime soon, but over the next 3, 5, 10 years, I want to put TripAdvisor out of business, man. Like I don't see any reason for apps, incumbents like TripAdvisor, like Yelp, like meetup.com, like I hate those three guys, to exist. And if we do this right, I think we can displace all of them and, you know, really do something special. Like the social graph, and particularly a social graph like Nostr, which the users control and own their identity. This is going to open up an entirely new design space and allow us to build applications that we just couldn't do before. So kind of went off on some tangents. I'll shut up, but that's the big idea.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. And I completely see your vision. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of add? I kind of want to ask you a bonus question that is not directly related to Setlantis. So, before we pivot, anything else you make sure you want listeners to know? Or
let's do one more thing then. So for the listeners, we raised a seed round last year, and like we got some awesome investors. So if, you know, people might know like Alan Farrington from Axiom Capital, we've got Time Chain Capital, we've got HCM Capital, Jack Lee and the guys, and our flagship investor is actually Ross Stevens from NYDIG. So we've got an awesome sort of seed round class, and we are going to be doing a Series A next year, and we're going to go for something large, like probably 5 or 10 mil. But before we do that, someone reached out to me and said, hey man, you should do an equity crowdfund. You should have the crowd and the people that are going to be using this app that are interested in that see the vision, like have a piece of the pie. And I was like, Jesus, that's such a good idea. Like, and I actually did this with my previous company in Amber, was we opened it up to people to be able to own a little piece of the pie. So we have partnered up with Timestamp Financial, which is a Bitcoin-centric crowdfunding platform. So kind of like StartEngine, but for Bitcoin companies specifically. And they're the first in the world to allow people to invest in companies in Bitcoin. And this is not, you know, as you know, no shit coining here. This is not a token. This is nothing. This is like an actual equity crowdfund. So it'll allow people to invest in products like Setlantis and many other Bitcoin companies from, like, I think it's from as little as $100. You don't have to be an accredited investor. You don't have to, like, none of that bullshit. This is like full retail. And I think you can go from 100 up to like 50 grand. So it's like, it's a whole range. So we are planning to launch that in June. And I guess depending on when this podcast comes out, if people want to check it out, it'll be on timestampfinancial.com. And, you know, if people sort of see this vision, we want to give the retail an opportunity to come in early before we go and do a big Series A next year, because that's going to be at a higher valuation. So it's a cool opportunity. So that's the one thing I'd like to mention for anyone listening and anyone who's interested.
Hey everyone, quick question. Have you ever thought about starting a video podcast like this one? I want to introduce you to the team behind my show, Podigy. This podcast has been one of the best marketing tools for our business. And thanks to Podigy, all I have to do is hit record. They handle everything else, editing, writing, publishing, and making sure that it's perfectly optimized for every platform. They only work with disruptors, mavericks, and changemakers, people making a real difference, spreading big ideas. Typically, Podigy is fully booked, but right now they have a few spots open for new clients. Listeners of this show get 10% off launching their own podcast or optimizing their current one. Click the link in the bio for a free one-on-one podcast planning session with Podigy. If you are thinking about starting a podcast or you have one and you want to take it to the next level, I can't recommend Podigy enough. Check them out. So we've been painting this picture. Noster, you mentioned earlier in the conversation, you think this is something that will continue to evolve over 50 years, has lots of room to grow. Obviously, this is a Bitcoin show, and we talk a lot about Bitcoin in your book. Bushido really discusses the notion that Bitcoin is already won. And now we're talking about a sort of future state world where this app is really, you know, helping people that have shifted back towards, you know, experiences and actually doing things in the real world are connecting with each other in a way that's, you know, maybe like a mini renaissance to how things were before 2020 or beyond. And I just would love to hear your thoughts on how you see technology evolving and changing the world we're living in over the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, you know, a hot take on how you think our listeners should be thinking about the decentralization of technology, the adoption of Bitcoin, and where you think this is all going.
Really good question, man. So I'm going to throw a couple hot takes out there. I think one of them is, let's start with this sort of like context. As you said, there's been this desire to, you know, since COVID and since the lockdowns and since everything went virtual, there's been this sort of like pent up desire to start doing things in person again, right? I think that is going to increase and it's going to continue to increase. People are craving connection and the online world is being filled with basically slop. I don't know what other way to put it. Like Twitter is just slop now. Instagram is slop. TikTok is slop. And sure, you can kind of curate your way through it and find stuff. But because of the nature of the algorithms and the nature of, you know, the reptilian human mind, like slop ends up finding its way to the top again. So people are craving in-person connection and they're craving values alignment and networks again. And I gave a talk last year called The Future of Social Networks, where I kind of like laid out the map where social networks originally started as social networks. Like if you remember Facebook from back in the day, like you didn't follow people, you connected as friends and you know you had to connect to each other to be friends. And it was a very different experience. And then somewhere along the line, it was around like 2016, 2017, that it was kind of like TikTok originally, sort of early days of TikTok, they copied YouTube's recommendation algorithm and TikTok became more of like a content platform than a social network. And then Instagram kind of saw their success, and they kind of pivoted towards that. And since 2017, 2018, everything has become more algorithmic and more social media than social network. So it's kind of like shifted to that side. And because of the nature of media, like if it bleeds, it leads, we are driven to like compound everything from clickbait and hysteria and all this sort of shit. And that's why every day on Twitter, there's like some new fucking drama, right? So people are getting tired of that. And what I think the solution is one, actually, I should say one more thing that's accelerating this even further. The advent of language models and this sort of like new wave of AI, it's accelerating that even further. The amount of slop now is increasing exponentially. If we thought it was bad earlier, like it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. The whole fucking web is just going to become full of bots and fake accounts, basically. And people, as much as someone can try and figure out how to make a language model as realistic as possible, the underlying desire for you and I as human beings is we want to connect. Like I don't care how realistic Scott Dedel's AI is. I want to speak to Scott. Like, I'm not going to be fucking friends with a bot. Like, it's not what I'm interested in. So as all of that starts to accelerate, we're going to have this sort of whiplash effect, which is, you know, we are going to want to, and I would, when I say we, I probably mean like the non-NPCs, right? So like people are going to want to connect in real life, run events, do all that sort of stuff, and like really build community. And fingers crossed, also try and connect digital community to that in such a way that reflects it, right? So not full of bots and clickbait and all this sort of stuff. So I think one technological shift is that. I think number two is to do with AI. A lot of people are running around talking about how AI is going to change the world and AGI is around the corner and, you know, the overlords and Sam Altman and this and that and all this kind of crap. I'm not convinced. I think life is far more intelligent. I see life as the living, breathing thing we are. You know, when you see, like, for example, your wife, like, creating a baby, a life inside of her, you start to realize that intelligence is way more than just, like, computational language output, right? Like, intelligence and life and the very living, breathing earth and everything around us is way more intelligent. We are not getting AGI anytime soon. General intelligence is way broader. I don't even know if we'll ever get AGI, to be honest. I think that's, like, sort of a nerd's fantasy. Like, for those who recognize that and don't get lost in all of the AI drama and, like, oh, I've got to become, like, a prompt engineer or any of that sort of stuff. Like, if they focus on real world community and real skills that can't be replaced, like, basically don't be an NPC. Get out of the middle of the bell curve and don't do shit that can just be replaced by digital, you know, AI stuff. And if you do that, you're going to be in a position where you zag while the world is zigging, right? So if the world is zigging or if the world is zagging, you zig, right? So you go the opposite way. And I think there's going to be so much potential again for real world stuff. And that is related, obviously, to the first point. So you've got social media, you've got AI, you've got all this sort of stuff. And that is, like, going in that direction. I think that's going to open the opportunity for us to do stuff in the other direction. And where does Bitcoin take us in all of this? I believe that we're going to see, even though I think a lot of the AI stuff is hyped, we're going to see deflationary pressure from AI because a lot of the pricing mechanisms and all this sort of stuff that we've had in the world over the last 10, 15 years has been kind of like middle bureaucracy pointless work. And it adds layers of cost to everything, which now 80% of that is just going to get washed out because why pay someone to do a mindless article for a blog, which doesn't mean anything when you can just get ChatGPT to do it? So a lot of that stuff is going to get compressed and it's going to mean that prices start to, I mean, fundamentally come down and people are going to be looking for not only new things to do, but new money to hold, new things to invest in, and I think a lot of that capital is going to come into Bitcoin. So you've got this kind of like trifecta of things. And I think the goal for people and for anyone listening to this, if they want to sort of glean anything from it, I think the delta is going to be do things that are real, do things that are with humans. Obviously, get as much freaking Bitcoin as you can because that's never going to change and that's the heartbeat. Don't get lost in all the AI nonsense. I think a lot of it is overhyped and it's important to know how to use it, but recognize that everybody is going to be depending on AI. And if everybody is depending on an AI, there's no competitive edge there. Go do something that doesn't depend on AI and you're going to have a massive edge because that's going to be where the minority is. And that's the contrarian kind of thing that'll help you. And then just use AI where needed to, like, auto, you know, simplify your life so that you can do the things that you want to do as a human better.
Love it. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Listen, Alex, appreciate you coming back on the show. We're going to include in the show notes some links to find Bushido of Bitcoin and Settlantis, but anywhere else you would like listeners to be steered if they want to find more of you or connect with you.
Man, I mean, people can find me on Twitter if they type in Svetsky. I got my old Twitter account that was banned back in the COVID days. I got that back. So people will see there's two Svetskys out there now. There's Alex Svetsky and there's Svetsky Writes. So I think I'm going to run these accounts separately, one for more like the author persona and one for the builder persona. So we'll see. But people can search for that. But otherwise, I would love them to check out Settlantis. Check it out. Have a play around. See what you like, reach out to us, give us feedback. This is the thing we're building, and we're building it for, as I said, Bitcoiners, sovereign individuals. It's like a much larger community. We're not going to do just like a Bitcoin echo chamber. Like, we're going to do something larger and larger and larger because we want to bring people into Bitcoin. Like, one day when we have 100,000 merchants on Settlantis and they've all got an account and they're all just doing their thing, we're going to one day just flip a button and give all of them a Bitcoin address. Automatically. That's how you fucking onboard everybody into Bitcoin. So that's the big idea. Would love people's feedback. I'd love them to try it out. And I'm online. Hit me up anytime.
Very cool. The app looks great. And wish you all the success with the launch. And if you're listening to the episode and you made it all the way to the end, I want to thank you as well for tuning in. And hope to see you again next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and VMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.